Webinar with Adam R. Welcome to 3PNR. I'm your host, Adam R. And joining me for this episode is Sev Talk. Sev, how you doing?
Hello, Adam. Hello, everyone. I'm doing well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I'm glad to have your time. A pleasure to have you. Let's open up with this. Let's discuss what put you on this path in ufology and the research thereof.
Oh, it was my personal journey, my spiritual expansion, the desire to expand my awareness. And so I started this very difficult journey, as those of us who've done this before, where you keep looking in to try and heal, to try and clean, just to try and face things about yourself that for decades you just tried to ignore, because it wasn't working out well for me. One of the things that I was ignoring was that I was the ET contactee. And I ignored that for virtually all of my life. And that was causing problems in all areas of my life. When you're hiding something that's very authentic and real and true to you, you cannot be fulfilled and successful in all the areas of your life. It just doesn't work that way. To be authentic, you got to face what it is that you're afraid of and deal with it and heal it. So as I was on this journey of self-exploration, it was time for me to deal with the aliens. The aliens came up. And I had contact here in North Carolina in 2017 that just shook my world. And I couldn't deny it anymore. So because of that contact, I started facing my ET reality, so I could really show up as the most authentic version of myself, because I just want to live a life that's fulfilled and peaceful, dynamic. And I believe that really the only way to do that is to be the real you, the true you. So in the search of the real me, I had to confront my ET reality.
So is it in 2017, was it your first experience or was there something prior?
No, my first conscious memory of ET contact was from the age 10. And so I just hid it for decades. I've had lots of contact and I hid it for decades and decades until 2017. It was the second night that I moved here from Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C.
So they're obviously they're following you. So I'm under the impression, this is how it goes. And people, there's a lot of naysayers. They want to say things like, well, abduction sounds, moronic, doesn't make sense. But when we as humans find a test subject and we like something about either their genealogy or something of their personality, or just we want to learn more, we abduct people or animals all the time, We conduct studies against their will, at least. Humans get to go home, right? They're released, where we don't release what we take. So something in your genealogy is probably attractive to them. Perhaps, maybe there's something in your DNA they want to utilize for a future program. It's unclear. So what is your impression?
Unclear. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. What is your impression of what it is that your interaction is with them?
What comes to my mind are a couple of things. Although my parents didn't really talk much about it, my parents did come in contact with non-human entities, but they really didn't talk about it very much. So I never talked about it with my grandparents or anything like that. But there was probably a lineage of abduction in my family. There's also a lot of military in my family. And so there's certain boxes you can check off with a lot of experiencers, and one of them is some kind of military affiliation.
Right.
And also generations of ET contact.
Yeah, it's definitely generational. I'm finding a lot of I look for patterns, right? I always try to observe everything for the pattern that exists in it. And I find it's pretty commonplace for people who would have experienced for it to be somewhere in the family, whether it skips a generation or it's selective by members. Again, if Sev, if you and I went to another planet We were exploring, and we found a planet with humanoids on it. They were intelligent. We can't breathe their air. It's different, different chemical makeup than what we were used to. We would have to conduct a program where, one, we could study them without intervening, because that's the rules of nature. We see this exhibited in the study of animals. You could observe nature, just don't get involved, unless you hit them with a car. Then, you know, you have an obligation. But we would probably have a hybrid program if we eventually wanted to, like, you know, integrate with them. And then a hybrid program, people have this misconception with technology that's sophisticated, it could be overnight. It's thousands of years. It would take forever to perfect. You know, you're trying to replicate something nature created. So, again, with you and several other people, and not everyone's case is the same, right? They have different interests for different subjects. But in your case, and a lot of cases, it might just be the genealogy they're interested in.
Yes, that could very well be. I was shown a baby in a tube, and I was given information about the hybridization program from the Grays. So there's that. And I do believe that, although I've just kind of newly discovered what I think my current role is with all this UFO ET stuff, to come out and to talk about it and to help experiencers. It's very important to come out to yourself. It's so crucial to come out to yourself if you want to find peace and fulfillment. You don't have to come out and write a book and go on interview shows. You don't have to do any of that. But it's so important that you do not deny something that's real about you. And I encourage experiencers to contact me through my website, planetsev.com. I can help you as much as I can. I also help experiencers around the world through MUFON. And this, my desire to cast aside my fears that I had about coming out, and it was really the best thing I've ever did to come out through my book, You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. I want to take away the stigma of those of us who have had ET contact have had thrust upon us. I want to take that away, because these experiences that we're having are amazing. They're remarkable. They're profound. We're given information that can help us individually and help us collectively.
I agree. You know, to support what you're saying, you know, I started an information email, and so I'd been reached out to by a lot of people. And the majority don't want to be public with it. A handful of doctors, law enforcement, military, they don't want it because there's still that weird stigma. And so the government, rather than us asking them for disclosure, we need a larger base of government acknowledgement. Because with that sort of acknowledgement allows people in certain professions and people of certain beliefs to come forward. Right? So the government's acknowledging this worldwide. Perhaps maybe I should speak my story now. And people like you are good.
Yes.
Because you're going to create a gateway. And that I can't tell you how many people I speak to that don't want to be public on the podcast with it. And I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I've spoken to many experiencers, and it's very rare that someone wants to go public, and that's totally okay. But what I do on my website, if you do want to contact me, I just ask you a few questions, and this is very personal. I don't share the information or your name with anybody, but also on my website, planetsev.com, I do share some of the stories from the experiences around the world and some of their drawings and their pictures without using their names unless they want me to. So experiencers can go through that, can scroll through that and maybe see a picture of the same kind of ET they saw, or maybe read an experience very similar to theirs so they don't feel alone, and kind of bolster them and give them a little bit of courage to start dealing with this and facing it. The thing is, there are millions of people having ET contact, and most of them don't even know it. Because, you know, Adam, a lot of this ET contact is in a multidimensional, interdimensional way. A lot of it is not 3D. And so when we have these experiences and we think they're dreams or hallucinations or whatever we might think they are. Usually we think they're dreams, but at the same time, we acknowledge that was not a dream, but, you know, it was a dream. Well, it wasn't a dream. It was this interdimensional experience that our society has not really placed a name on it or given it any legitimacy. Oh, let's just call it a dream. It didn't really happen. But no, it happened. People are coming out of these so-called dreams with marks on their bodies, like I did. That's not a dream. A dream does not put two red X marks on my tush. That was a real experience, but it felt like a dream.
Yeah, you know, I'd spoke with Kathleen Martin. It was episode 137. Oh, yeah. And she's actually is how I contacted you. So that being said, I told her in that episode about a dream I had. And I think it's because I was diving so deep investigating the abduction phenomena. And so I had, and if you listen to the episode, I go into real detail about, you know, what the dream was. But I was aggressive in the dream. Like this entity's there in my dream. I'm aware of it. I basically fought and resisted whatever it was doing. I was making demands, which is typical me. What am I going to get out of this, right? But some people, when they have these dreams, and I'm a different breed of person. I'm that strange, brave person. I'm the guy that dies in a movie. Go right at it. I got to see what it is. But there's other people that are in just absolute denial, especially people of faith. When something disrupts their faith, it could put them through severe psychological issues, emotional issues, because they're so blindly invested into what it is they believe in. And that could be a problem in the ufology community as well. Do you agree?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. When you say faith, let's just pick one. Let's pick the Catholic faith. And so it's okay to talk to an angel. And it's okay to talk to Jesus. And it's okay to talk to Archangel Michael. Which are beings that are not of this earth. And yeah, these are beings that we fully trust, know everything about us, trust everything they have to say. We think they can guard our lives for the better. Is that illogical? But then, you know, if I tell my neighbor I talked to an angel this morning, they would say, oh, that's so lovely. But if I tell them I talked to an alien this morning, they would think I was had serious issues. But there's no difference. What's the difference?
It's crazy, right? Because I grew up in Catholic background. I grew up enough to understand that a lot of that's to me. And people think I attack religion. I don't attack religion. However, I'm an evidence-based person. And there's more good evidence of extraterrestrial existence than there is good evidence of angels. You know, that's just the point of view I have. Like, for again, 2017, the military starts releasing their videos. Ironically, the videos they release of the gimbal, it turns on its side, it rotates belly first and travels the direction of its belly. Rewind time, you know, maybe 15, 18 years prior, Bob Lazar described that. Is that how they would behave in detail? And then rewind time even further. There was a woman in the 50s who noticed that the object she observed rotated and traveled belly first. And so when the military releases these videos and I'm now seeing this object behave that way, I'm invested. I personally have never witnessed anything, but at that point I got to know more. And that's when I got into more research. And then in 2020 during the pandemic, I'm like, I might as well start a podcast. I want to learn more. And the best way to learn information is to absorb information, because there's another bad part, right? There's people that they just naysay. They want to disprove rather than absorbing information. There's no bad information. You just got to know how to filter. And it's not the job of us to say, well, no, you're wrong, because we don't know from their perspective. Everything is perspective and how you perceive. So
absolutely. And that goes that exact same way of thinking applies to ET contact. Kathy Martin and I have actually talked about this, about perception. How you view your reality on Earth is how you're going to view your reality off of Earth. So if you think you're a victim on Earth, as I used to think I was a victim, I was a huge victim. And that's why I thought when my initial contact with the Greys, I thought they were victimizing me, because I thought everybody was victimizing me. And it's not until I popped out of that victim vibe that I realized, oh, the Greys weren't victimizing me. They were helping me this whole entire entire time. So Kathy and I were talking about perception. And if you view yourself as a victim, then when you have a ET contact, it could very well be that you perceive it as being very negative and very scary and bad for you. But if you have a different perception, this very same event, you can perceive it as, oh, they were really nice.
Yeah, agreed. Because again, at the end of the day, I haven't heard a case of an experiencer where they were tortured. I've yet to hear that, you know? And these beings, these entities have been around for what we know now is thousands of years. If they had an agenda to take over or be hostile, they would have done it long before we had the power of the sun on the tip of a missile. I guarantee it.
Yes. Although there are some experiencers that feel like they were tortured through some examinations and things, but that torture we could say was just developed in their own mind. We could say that, but they don't want to hear that. So it's a very iffy. I don't want to discount anyone's feelings or even their viewpoint when it comes to their experiences, but I am throwing it out there that perspective is everything, even on Earth. Perspective is everything.
I agree. You know, the people, here's what I've had time to evaluate this. The people that have the negative reactions to being abducted or being studied for that matter, I find these to be alpha people who are in positions of control in life, typically. So there's a lot of pushback. A lot of other people that are more open-minded and they really evaluate, like perception, they evaluate what happened. They have less pushback. And then there's that other percentage of people where it's just Tuesday. They're unaffected by it. Don't even talk about it because, you know, it's divided this way. I've been researching it so thoroughly to find that these three branches exist. An example, the guy I do a lot of off podcast interviews because a lot of people don't want to be on the podcast. They don't want to be public. And one gentleman that I'd spoken to, he's military. And he said his experience was negative, that he was forced. And then I compared him to some of the other people, another person, a gentleman who's the head of a company. He's a CEO of a company. And then I started realizing it's people in position of power that typically don't, they are the ones with the negative experience because they're not used to being submissive in any way, shape, or form. And then, you know, like I said, there's these other people that evaluate it and they like you. You went from being in a victim position to now an acceptance position and a learning position. You want to be enlightened, you want to help others get enlightened as well. And then there's these people. I'm not kidding. It's just Thursday to them. No effect. So it's a strange phenomenon in a way. But everything I hear about it, I think about us. I think about humans. We do it all the time. We do this all the time to animals, to insects. If we find tomorrow a lizard that doesn't get sick ever for any reason, you better believe we're cutting a bunch of them open, you know?
I know. We're horrible when it comes to how we treat animals.
Yeah, well, it sounds horrible. It's science. But for what we do, it is horrible. Let's be honest. At least, again, we get to go home. These people that have these experiences, they get to go home. They're returned. Virtually unscathed, you know? So it's a bizarre. So for you in the beginning, what was your first experience and what was it like?
My first conscious memory, and everything I'm going to talk about are conscious memories. I like to talk about my conscious memories of my ET abductions. Right. Well, I don't even like the word abduction. I use it sometimes because sometimes it's just really the only word. And it's a word that people are very familiar with. But to me, abduction, well, that connotes victimization. Because I do believe that our higher selves are always in play. And it could be that our earthly selves are just really might not be in tune with what our higher selves are. Need or want or
Sev, real quick, Sev, there's a gentleman, I'll have you continue, but a gentleman, I'm glad you said what you just said. A gentleman I was talking to about 3 weeks ago off podcast. We had like a 15 minute interview and I said, well, tell me more about your abduction. He says, no. Yeah, and he's one of the negative experiencers. He doesn't like it, but he doesn't call it abduction. He calls it the appointment. Because he says it seems pretty to him. It seems calendar systematic, like it's almost every 3 months within a specific time frame. And he noticed his words. Let me read this. his words are changes in diet, different supplements. Is when, according to what he's saying, is when he had made changes in his diet, is when his next appointment came to be. But continue on.
Okay, well, I just forgot where I was because I was just so interested in what you just said, the word appointment. I've never really heard that before.
That's the first and last person I heard say that, but when he said it, and again, this is a person with negative experiences, called it the appointments. Because it got to the, in the beginning, how he described it, in the beginning, it was unwanted, and then after a while, he just submitted. He's like, it's out of my power. I'm not going to, and his attitude is, I'm not going to tell my superiors I'll lose my job. So it's just appointments at this point.
And so he just decided to just go with it.
I mean, as he said it to me, there's really nothing he could do about it. And, you know, why allow myself to feel like I'm having negativity where I could just roll with it? Because it goes, as of thus far, I'm not dead. They haven't harvested any organs and it hasn't affected his job. In fact, it hasn't even affected his sleep, which I found strange, right? Because some people of experience, I ask a lot of people, do you own a smartwatch? If so, what's your REM state like on your sleep study? Like you said earlier, are these beings, I'm starting to believe, they don't always need a physical interaction with us. They could upload, download. Your sleep state is your most vulnerable state. They could probably upload and download information in real time right from your sleep state.
So. Yeah, well, we're all playing in that world of consciousness. We're all meeting in the world of consciousness.
Agreed.
So it's a playground of consciousness where we all exist. So we can bump into any entity, and there's an unlimited amount of entities and the unlimited amount of dimensions. And so we could be talking to any kind of entity.
Yeah, science is starting to support a lot of that. We're starting to learn a lot about, there's scientists that are now coming to the conclusion that there's a alternate existence directly parallel to us.
At least one. The quantum physics thinks in infinity. Every time you make a decision, you create a slightly different alternate version of Earth. Every time you make a choice, you move into another slightly different version of Earth. And then there's other Earths that are also holding the other decisions that you could have made. And so that means there's just an infinite amount of realities and potentials for everybody and everything, not just humans, but for ETs and cats and dogs and just the potential of a different, so many unlimited amount of realities. It's just mind blowing.
Yeah.
And so why are we playing in this particular reality? I don't know.
Well,
I don't know why I'm in this particular reality. Somebody
hit me with a question, so I asked it to a psychic. I said, why can't you predict the lottery? And it turns out the best explanation, and what I actually subscribe to this explanation, the timelines are different. You can't, small variables in what we do here on Earth alter timelines. So you can't forecast numbers because that's to that timeline. Now, let's hypothetically say one person won a lottery. It changes the timeline of that person's existence, right? They're on a new path. So there's several different paths in our reality, so we call it. So it's just a strange phenomenon.
Yeah, in every given second, you're changing the future according to what you're thinking, what you believe, what you perceive to be real, and what you're doing, what you're taking action and doing. Every given second, we change the future.
Yeah, like even in science, they say atoms and different particles in space, they react differently upon observation. They're doing
one thing. Yes, the observer's paradox. Yeah. I love that one.
So when you, and this is science speaking, this isn't not some conspiracy someone dug up. We were learning this. And so if we're altering the path and the outcome of a particle somewhere by observing it, then the same could be said for here on Earth, right? There's the same thing you say for our existence. Right? There's a lot of similarity and a lot of things I'm starting to learn.
Yes. So there really ultimately is no independent investigation or viewpoint into something, because the minute you focus on it, you change it.
Right. So for you, well, let's go back to your first experience and how it played out for you.
from the age of 10 to 12, I was living in the Washington, D.C. suburbs at the time. I would find myself at night outside in the dark, and I knew that this spaceship was coming. I would see the spaceship coming, and from each time it came from a different direction. And this happened so many times that I lost count between the age of 10 and 12. And I would be so happy, like my family member was coming. And the ship would come and it would hover over me. And it was so big that it would just block out the sky. And it would land and stairs would come down and this being would come down to greet me. And it was always the same being. It looked very human, like a human male in his 30s. Dark hair, dark clothes. The only difference really was the ears were just slightly different. They were just a little bit more oblong. And, he felt like my brother and he was checking up on me. He was just making sure I was okay. And we chit chat. And then I was just ding, my eyes would pop open, fully alert. And I'm in my bedroom. And I'd be confused because my bedroom didn't feel as real as what just happened. That felt way more real. And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, this is confusing. I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to ignore it. And I'm 10 years old and I'm just going to get dressed and go to fifth grade. I'm not going to tell anybody. Now, I could have told my parents. My parents were very open-minded, before their time, total believers, but I didn't. I didn't tell anybody. I held that a secret for decades. So this continued for a couple of years until the very last time, and when I was 12, and this time it was different because this time I was with a group of other kids, and I had never been with other kids before. And we stood in line and we watched the ship go away and we were really sad because we knew that we weren't going to see him again. And, I didn't look into the kids' faces, but I felt like we were all around the same age because we were around the same height. And then I just had this knowing that I had never had before. I knew that I had to get to work. I had to do what I was supposed to do. And then, ding, I'm back in my bedroom, wide awake. And I'm like, my work, I'm supposed to do something? I don't even know what that means. At the age 12, that made no sense to me. And so I just kind of ignored that until recently. And now I think I'm starting to figure out what my work is.
Pray tell.
Well, to help experiencers come out to themselves and to help society understand that this is real and to embrace those of us who are having these experiences because our stories can help us individually and collectively. And that's what I believe I'm to do right now, and that's what I'm doing.
That's interesting because so when they're coming to you, you're having a positive chemical reaction. You're in joy to see them. You're in joy to know they're even sad when they're leaving, which sounds to me like they've given you an emotional imprint, right? They printed upon you. Which is at the end of the day, if something's printing upon you and there's no harm coming to you or your family and there's no destruction, I don't see the negatives there, right? The plus column's looking pretty good.
Yeah, there were no negatives in those experiences. My negatives occurred when I got older and the grays were coming to me. And that is when I was scared to death and I thought the grays were evil and I thought they were messing with me and toying with me. Yeah, that came several years later.
So for me personally, the initial beings you saw, if from what I hear, are the beginnings of the hybrid program. That's the introduction between the humans and what we've created. And they're trying to form bonds, right? And for me, the grays, I have a theory about the grays. I think the smaller ones, I think they're biological robots with consciousness upload to them, like an avatar in a sense. Like they could be controlled at will. They could be even on loan to other species of alien that want to make an observation of Earth. However, the taller gray is one I'm starting to believe to be biological. the smaller grades they came from, everything I've read about them, from everything I study about them, you can't discern one another from they, you know, there's no way to tell them apart. They speak with telepathy, which if you, from what I read about, to channel the human brain, because if you look at a human brain, it's a very complex computer, has receptors in it, millions and millions of neurons. So they could probably project information to you in your head. I mean, science is working on this now. We've known this to be a factor long ago about using radio waves and information to be sent to and from. So for the smaller gray, I'm under the impression they're, like I said, they're a small bio, they're the worker drone. They're the ones that they go do the job. They're controlled remotely by a consciousness upload. I would think the experience with them would be a little negative because they're very different from what you described from the first group, right? They're methodical in what they're doing. They don't have expression. So let's move into that. Talk about the grays and your introduction to them and how that unfolded.
Okay. But before my first experience that I remember with the grays, I'd just like to say that what you just said about the sentience levels of the different types of grays, it goes exactly hand in hand with what I was told. And I was given this information during a MILAB experience, you know, military abductions.
Right.
And I have about 5 or 6 conscious MILAB experiences. One of them was absolutely horrible. One of them was kind of bad, and the others were neutral. And so in one of my neutral experiences, I was in this room, and I'd been in this room before, and I'm sitting at a table, and each time in this MILAB experiences, there's these young men in these rooms that seem like government-type rooms because they're just really drab and really drab furniture, hardly anything there, drab clothes on the guys. They're young, in their 30s, and they have really short hair. And twice I've been in this room sitting at a table facing a room across from me, and we're divided by a window so I can see into the other room. And one time a tall gray was brought into the other room across from me. And the MILAB guy said to me, "This is the original gray." And then that one was taken out and the shorter one came in. And he said, "This is a hybrid of the original." And then that one was taken out. And then the shortest one came in. He said, "This is a hybrid of the original." And with each one, sentience declines.
So, yeah, that's it's to me, it sounds right. Like if we had it our way, if humanity had it our way and we want to go explore Mars, for instance, we want to conduct science. Now, some time ago, I asked a kid in my family, said, "Draw the perfect robot to go explore Mars." And he drew a bipedal robot with 2 arms and it had 2 large cameras in its face, right, to look around. And so then I went to another friend of mine. I know he works in mechanics, engineering, and I asked him, "Hey, what would be the perfect robot to explore Mars?" Now, this kid I asked, my nephew at the time, I think at the time he was 10. Then you fast forward this other guy who's a grown man, he works in engineering, and he draws something identical, you know? And then you consider what the little gray guys are. Like, if you consider, yeah, like, so they're being mass produced. Their eyes, I've always thought, were scanners. Like, they've been, you know, modified to be scanners and cameras. And if they're doing the program you're saying, then yeah, it would, with their ability to be sentient being reduced, they would have to put something in their brain. Like, we're, like an example, we're going to have Neuralink soon. That's coming. Right, we're gonna have a chip in the brain.
What?
Neuralink. It's a chip in the brain where we could send information to one another just with our heads, and we could view our content online just in our own head. Right, we could communicate without words essentially. So,
yeah, which we all can do anyway. We all have that ability. There's so many experiencers that had telepathic communication with ETs, and if you had asked them the day before their contact, "Are you telepathic?" they would have said, "Oh no," and then they have this telepathic communication as easy, so easy, no issues, no problems. We're all telepathic.
Yeah.
Now the thing is our society ready to be telepathic? No. So I think societies, this is my current theory, societies that are loving and kind and respectful have no problem living in a telepathic world because they don't have to hide any thought from each other.
Right. Yeah. That's there are some dangers to knowing, just having a knowing of one another. Like you could, it would make it harder for evil people to be deceptive, right? They would have to master a way to do it, right?
Absolutely. That's why I think on these planets where telepathy rules, they don't have that problem.
Well, the big thing is too, for these beings to travel here now, whether it be the vastness of space or they crossed a portal, however they did it, I promise you they did it as a species. They no longer did they have in other words, there was no tribal nature in their group, right? There's no Republicans, Democrats, there's no race. There's none of these things that divide, because to perform what they're doing, to come together and say, we're going to explore the vastness of space, however they do it, you have to be in agreement completely. And I've said this on a podcast, like Elon Musk, when he's going to start terraforming Mars, when he gets to that point, the application is not going to have the what's your race, what's your religion, what's your politics on there. It's not going to be there. It's going to be what can you contribute to planet Mars, period. Nothing else matters at that point. The rest of it is just nonsensical. So it's intriguing to me because for people like you, people of experience, there's purpose, there's reason for selection. And that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around, because it's not completely a genealogy thing, nor is it, it's definitely not a personality thing. All right. So I kind of want to wrap my head around how they're selecting. And like you said earlier, I didn't think about this. We could all be being watched, because if you really consider, if for them to, this is a sophisticated group of beings. If they really want to watch us now, every one of us in my room right now, cameras, microphones, my phone has a camera in it, my TV, to observe me is it's effortless. They don't even really need to try anymore. We've made it very easy. But for people with the direct experience like yourself, that's the question. That's the enigma to me. So in that experience of the Greys,
it could be we're all in contact, and maybe only some of us can consciously handle it, even if we think we can't handle it or we're not handling it.
Right.
If we are all multidimensional beings, as we are, it means that we're having multidimensional communication and interactions with other dimensions, with other multidimensional beings. You and I are talking to other multidimensional beings right now.
Right.
But you and I are, you're not the only being I'm talking to. There's other aspects of me that are talking to other beings too. And it could very well be that we're all talking to angels, and we're all talking to ETs, and we're all talking to Jesus or whoever it is that lives in these other dimensions. But maybe only some of us are consciously remembering some of our ET contact.
Right.
But maybe all of us are having it.
And to be fair, a sophisticated race of beings that are making an observation to Earth for science purpose would probably utilize a program that would suppress our memory of it, as we would.
Yes.
We definitely would do that. Unquestionable.
Oh, yeah. I do not think I remember everything. And so I'm just waiting to be aligned with the frequency of that information to have my aha moment and to remember, because everything has energy to it. And so do thoughts, and so do events. And I do believe that when our personal vibration is aligned with the vibration of a knowing, of a knowledge, of a memory, then we remember it, and we call those aha moments. But what it is that memory or that knowledge or that knowing is always sits inside of you. But if you're not aligned with the energy of it, you don't know it.
Agreed. I agree with you. And to support what you said earlier, the human brain, our hardware, our computer, identical across the board. The only separation between them is the software. I believe some psychics tapped into the software to utilize that power. Some people could perceive things others can't, because we lack the software or the download, however you want to look at it.
Well, maybe just turning on the run button or putting on the run button or whatever the button is called that you activate that particular program, because we all have the ability to have these. We all have psi abilities.
You know, there's people that here on Earth, and it's not supernatural, but it could be, right? I talk to a lot of homicide detectives, a lot of law enforcement. And when I speak to them, I hear that you know, it's just an instinct or I had a hunch. It's them tapping into a bit of software that other people don't have. And what happens is when the software gives them the alert, I feel like the bad guy's here, it's allowing a chemical reaction to the body to give him that quote unquote hunch or that instinct. You know what I mean? So, and like, yeah, this is
that spy instinct.
Yeah. And then it's exampled in sports all the time. There's some people that have like Michael, I say Michael Jordan a lot because I watched this documentary with him on Netflix, Save the Last Dance. When you listen to him speak about where he has to go mentally to increase his game and perform at his level, it's not a question of being physical anymore. He creates the physical strengths by using his mental power. He puts himself there. So at the end of the day, it's really just meditation and utilizing the parts of your brain you wouldn't use otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things I find interesting. And so when you kind of put these together in one subject, even for you, it's allowing that software to work in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So for the great, so finish with the grays now. So you had your first experience. It wasn't really positive at the beginning. How did it transpire thereafter?
All right. So, I'm 12 and my space brother flies away and I know I'm not going to see him anymore. And then from the time I'm 12 until maybe like, 30, 35 years later, during that time though, I'm having a lot of supernatural and paranormal experiences, tons, constant. And I'm kind of in denial about those too, but I've turned my attention more to the paranormal and the supernatural than the ETs. Well, I leave my second husband because he became abusive because I was a victim. So I've learned that I used to attract that. And after my second divorce, I was living alone in this apartment in Baltimore, Maryland, and I was just inundated with ET contact, supernatural and paranormal all at the same time. And my first memory of the gray was during this time. This was around 2012 when I was shown a baby in a tube. And I have pictures of this in my book, and I have pictures of the X's that were burned into my back and the pictures of the ET that I saw and other things. And this tube, I was in a dark room and I'm in front of this tube that's about as tall as I am and about as wide as I am. And there is this liquid in it and it's glowing this bluish hue. And floating at the top of this tube is a baby, a human looking baby. But its eyes are open in this liquid. And it's the bluest eyes I've ever seen in my life. And its legs were positioned so I couldn't tell its sex, but I just intuitively knew it was a boy. And I'm confused. I don't know why I'm looking at this baby in a tube. Why is there a baby floating in liquid? And then I sense that there's something behind me. So I turn around, and that's when I saw tall, medium, and short grays. Hmm. And this is before I knew they even came in different sizes. And they telepathically said to me, we're just going to stay back here because we're just going to give you time. Take all the time you need. It's okay. And I turned around and looked at the baby in the tube and I didn't get it. I was like, why do I have to look at this? I felt nothing for it. And then ding, once again, I'm fully alert in my bedroom. And I just tell myself, Sev, forget about it. Don't tell anybody. There's something else that I hid for decades. I have so many things that I hid for decades. And then something happened in Roswell. And I had this very spur of the moment trip to Roswell with my ex. And we were visited in the hotel room. And I was reminded of that baby in the tube. And I was given information about the hybridization program that evening. And at that time, I still thought they were really bad and evil. And then fast forward a year or two later, I move here to the Inner Banks of North Carolina. And my second night here, once again, the grays burn an X mark on the left cheek of my tush. And 9 days later, another red X mark on the right cheek of my tush. And this really sent me for a spin because I still thought they were evil and bad. And I thought they were messing with me on purpose.
Huh. Did it occur to you at some point or maybe cross your mind that baby you saw was created from your DNA? Is why they gave you time?
Yes. And I've had a MILAB. I think it's a MILAB. You know, Adam, I don't know. Have you investigated MILAB, and have you talked to people who've had MILAB experiences? And there's also experiences that some of us have. I'm calling MILAB, and I'm not quite sure what they are, where there's humans dressed as doctors and nurses, but you can tell it's not like an earthly thing because there's ETs there, there's hybrid babies there. And so I have a memory of that where I was asked to heal these hybrid babies. There was this male doctor standing next to me asking me to heal them. And the first one I started to heal because it was spitting up blood. And there was also a female nurse in the room. And then they handed me the second one, which was also spitting up blood. And both of these babies were swaddled very, very, very heavily. So I just saw their head. Well, the second baby, it started to roll off the table. So I grabbed the swaddling cloth, and then I saw its body. And its body was skinny, its neck was skinny, its arms were skinny, and it freaked me out. And then ding, I'm back in my room, and that's all I remember. So who were those, or what were those hybrid babies? And are humans involved in some kind of hybridization program that is not, does not involve the grays? And are they messing up? And that's why these hybrid babies are sickly, but the hybrids that the grays are creating are not as sickly. So these are all kinds of questions that I have. How many hybridization programs are there?
Well, here's what I can tell you. We've learned this the hard way in science ourselves, and regardless of how sophisticated your technology is, you're not going to be able to replicate exactly what nature does. We could clone, we could get close to it, but it's never going to, like you said earlier, when they're recreating the smaller grays, it's like they're getting dumber and dumber and dumber, you know? There was a movie that made me think of Multiplicity. You remember that movie?
No.
You have to watch that. Michael Keaton's in it, and he was making clones of himself, and they were just like literally getting, the IQ was dropping as he made more. And so,
oh, how interesting.
And so, and it was a comedy. But when I hear that, and then, so you consider like when we clone animals and they always have a defect and one died of cancer almost immediately. So it's when I say to people, if they're doing a hybrid program, it's not a generation, it's generations and more, who knows how long. Because if you're going to get near to what nature does naturally, it's going to require a crazy amount of time. It's not going to happen fast. So what I think you witnessed was botched programs. And when you have botched programs, you're not, if let's say these beings, they're I'm not going to say, you know, caring, because at the end of the day, it's science, but they're also not vicious. So they're not just going to kill these botched programs. However, they will study what went wrong. They'll keep them around. They'll try to figure it out. They got to do the rule out phase. So I think what you saw was one of their programs where things didn't work out so well, but let's monitor this and figure out what we could do to alter it. I say that because once upon a time, we were cloning human tissue on the backs and parts of animals. Like there was a mouse with a human ear on it. You know what I mean? And so how many of those programs failed? And we had a study that we don't tell the public, probably a tremendous amount. So it's the, when it comes to science and exploration, sky's the limit. Sky is the limit.
That's still going on with so many people want to buy these designer dogs when there's so many dogs that need homes in the shelter. And so when you cross these two types of dogs to come out with some kind of, you know, cock-a-poo-poo thing, there's all kinds of puppies that are being created out of that are not quite perfect. So what's happening to those puppies?
They're dying.
They're being killed because they really don't have all the cock-a-poo-poo traits that they want this dog to have.
Yeah.
That upsets me. That to me, that's the same kind of thing.
Humans are more dangerous than anything that's observing us that I could tell. You know, I mean, consider this. Like before human intervention, there were wolves, there were wild dogs in Africa, there were coyotes, there were foxes, there were no poodles, right? Labradors weren't even a thought. You know, there was no such thing as these things. It wasn't until we decided that we're going to alter their DNA and cross over and figure out what they are.
Never enough. Like we keep creating more dogs. I don't get it.
It's because they don't fit in the purse. And they,
Oh, that's so upsetting.
It's tragic.
Anyway, I'm really glad that you and I share this love of animals.
I love animals. I, you know, I don't, there's, as much as I love them, I'll never own a tiger. I see the outcome of that.
Oh, no.
Some things you should just let alone. They're meant to be wild, period, right? But they're there. Yeah. We can share our love for them. We can observe them. But unfortunately, like I said, when people tell me, and I hear people say, well, abduction's bullshit. Like, we do it to animals all the time. We found a frog once that was basically could change its sex and it wouldn't get sick. How many of those died in the name of science? Probably a crazy number, you know?
Or even for a good mascara.
Right.
So, for a good lipstick. How many animals die?
So when people say abduction sounds absurd, well, at least they're coming here to do their study. You go home. The animals don't. They typically don't.
We think, well, I don't know. Are there any people who don't come home?
Well, that's, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, we might know one day.
Because they're,
you know, at the last scene of Close Encounters, was it Close Encounters? Yeah, when the doors open up and some humans come walking out. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah. I think it was an astronaut or something. Oh, no, it was pilots that were in the Bermuda Triangle. Aren't those the pilots that came out of the saucer at the end of Close Encounters?
I believe so. You know, I'll have to rewatch. I haven't seen that since I was a kid. Right, so I'll have to rewatch it. But, you know, there's probably, how many people get aboard and say, look, I don't want to go back? They're like, huh? I don't want to go back.
Show me. It might happen.
I want to learn more. Teach me the universe. And if they, listen, if an alien abducts a person and they're that open-minded where they don't even have the most remote chemical response to them, maybe they do take them. Keep them. Show them the world.
Yeah, or they put them in a zoo.
Or a zoo. There's
that would be my fear.
There was an episode. What show was I watching? There was a show. I think it was Orville, where there was like a zoo, like this.
I watched that.
Yeah, this alien race was collecting species from everywhere and putting them in a zoo. And then he happened to grab Seth MacFarlane and his team, and they were in a zoo. It's not impossible. Oh. Listen, if you're a really sophisticated, if you're a really advanced, sophisticated being, and you see humans. And we're throwing missiles at each other, and we're speaking, we don't like each other because of the difference of language or religion. We're animalistic. We're no better than chimps, you know? I mean, so, yeah, they probably view us as wild animals. Some of them do. Then there's the other portion of them. I'm like, well, there could be there's a chance for them here. Some of them are intelligent. They do good things for people. We could, maybe if we influence them a little bit, or maybe we cross genealogy, we could improve their way of life. Who knows? There, you got to make room for a lot because I always base things on how we would behave.
Mm-hmm.
So right. For you, you have a MUFON thing coming up. Yeah.
Oh yes. So, I was so honored last year. MUFON, asked me to be the master of ceremonies at their national symposium in Denver. And I am the assistant state director for North Carolina for MUFON. I'm also on the executive, resource team, where there's about 50 or 60 of us on that from around the world. And we deal exclusively with people who've made direct ET contact. I'm also a field investigator for North Carolina. So field investigators with MUFON, they don't deal directly with ET contact. If there's ET contact in a case that someone submits to MUFON, then that's sent to the ERT. So I do both the field investigation and I do the ERT work. And so this year I was asked to give a talk one day of the 2023 symposium, which is happening in Cincinnati this year. And there's also a few other conferences that I'm so honored to be asked to give talks. And so there's several conferences coming up this year, which I'm very excited about.
Well, that's great. I mean, you're going to be on the move a lot, I'm seeing. I'm eventually going to get out there and go to some of the events because, you know, responsibly, I need to meet people and learn more. Because the first year for me was more absorbing information of the podcast. This next year, however, I'm going to be moving more to the investigative part, where I'm going to dig a little deeper into everything, because I'm one of these people. I wake up with a question mark, I go to bed with a question mark, and I got to learn more. That's how I am.
Mm-hmm.
Before we close out, discuss your books and your website and anywhere else you have information you want people to know about.
Thank you, Adam. My website is planetsev.com. And by the way, just as a little funny little story that I find humorous, I have a planet in a star system named after me in the Star Wars galactic system. It's the planet Sevtok and the star system Sevtok. And if anyone watches Star Wars Andor, they recently mentioned my name. They mentioned my planet in that particular episode. And so that's one reason why I named my website Planet Sev. And you can contact me there with your ET experience if you'd like some help processing it. I'm also a transformational coach, and on my website, I describe all that. I have a YouTube channel, Alien Spirit, and I have a lot of free videos on that, including videos that I created to help people connect and contact with otherworldly beings. I created these free guided meditations with music to help you connect with otherworldly beings. There's a series of those. And I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm also on a Canadian TV docuseries called UFO Encounter. I'm in the episode called Physical Contact, and I even have a butt double. And I'll be speaking at a lot of conferences this year. And my book, You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens, is on Amazon.
Excellent. I'll put all that in description so people could find it with no issue.
Thank you.
In the meantime, anyone listening, we're going to say good day, good evening, or whatever it is for you. And I'm going to talk to Sev in post.